Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Sustainable Badass, a Zero-Waste Lifestyle Guide by Gitte-Marie Johansen. Foreword by Imogen Lucas. Narrated by Kira Fix. Foreword. The past few years have seen some of the worst environmental disasters in history, signaling a new era of accelerating environmental destabilization. Food security and the strength of our global systems to meet basic human needs are under threat and have already caused irreparable damage in the global south. As our levels of consumption increase, so do the demands for fossil fuels and cheap labor. This is wholly unsustainable, and without systemic change, we cannot turn the tide on environmental destruction. All that said, there has been a fundamental shift in the perception of how the climate and waste crises are being handled. And with the advanced scrutiny coming from creators like Gitte-Marie, young activists living on the front lines of climate change, and organizations, there is hope for our future. Many have argued that individual action cannot save the planet, but to the contrary, many individuals have galvanized the world into action. However, we mustn't look to one person to motivate us, to see the enormity of the problem we are facing. Instead, we should individually do our parts and come together to create an even greater voice. Individual action plants a seed of hope in every single person who makes one swap, one lifestyle change, or reads one book outside their comfort zone. It is this action that helps to shift our mindset from overconsumption to mindful consumption, from buying the latest and greatest to choosing secondhand and vintage. While our one swap at a time may not immediately change the world, those around us will see our actions and may make one swap of their own. When you get thousands, if not millions, of individuals looking inward at their own actions, you get thousands of potential comrades with which to join forces. That self-scrutiny paves the way to create curious minds in all of us. If I want to stop consuming so many vegetables and plastic packaging, I may think about where I could shop to do so. After a time, I may consider how the shops themselves could make consumers' lives easier by offering unpackaged foods. Eventually, this may lead me to ask, why is so much plastic packaging used? And how could policy affect the whole country's level of consumption? And then it may lead to collective action, to protest, to petition, to actual systemic change. Gitte-Marie is particularly well-qualified, personally and professionally, to contribute to this conversation. And many of us who have followed her for years have learned a tremendous amount. One aspect of her work that is much needed is her in-depth video content that interrogates the validity of many sustainable claims. As an individual, it is often difficult to decipher what is and isn't greenwashing. Many brands seeking to offer consumers a more sustainable option often use buzzwords that actually lead to more confusion. I have no doubt that you will gain the tools needed to live more sustainably at the end of this book. And hopefully, it will motivate you to join forces and be a part of a collective for a more sustainable future. Imogen Emmy Lucas, sustainability low-impact blogger and influencer. Instagram handle, @sustainably_vegan. Preface. In January of 2015, I began an experiment. I wanted to live without producing any trash for a month. I had never been interested in sustainability before, and I had no idea where to begin, but I just threw myself into it headfirst. Through my experience with zero waste, I have learned that if we want to live in a more sustainable society, there are no shortcuts and easy fixes. At least this is the case if we want to permanently implement the green agenda into our daily lives. There are hundreds of ways to change your habits, but like with every other lifestyle change, they require patience and commitment. We live in a world where convenience and luxury dictate many consumers' priorities, and where most companies would rather sell us products that make us sick and unhappy than create a positive impact. Wow, okay, that sounds super woke, and maybe a little too holier-than-thou-ish for most tastes. But honestly, that is how it is. For that reason, it can be difficult to navigate all the information and all the noise which is affecting the discourse of sustainability. In this noise, it's super difficult to figure out what is right and what is wrong, and whether trying to live sustainably even matters if we cannot do it perfectly. At least those were my thoughts 5 years ago. As consumers and citizens of the world, we are often told that we can never change anything alone, that we are forced to sit down and wait for companies and politicians to get their act together, and then include us in their green agenda when they are ready to do so. But as an individual consumer, you can change a whole lot by yourself, simply by changing your habits. Where you shop, what you buy, and what you choose not to buy all have an important role to play. Because every time we pay for a product, we vote. We vote for what kind of future we want. I am hopeful that this book will make it easier for you to live a more sustainable life. Actually, my hope is that this book will give you an idea of what changes are effective, where the most meaningful changes happen, and how it's all connected. There are millions of sustainable lifestyles, and there is no one true answer which can explain all that is right and all that is wrong. Okay, maybe there are some answers, but because we are different, and because we all have different lives and needs, the question, what is most sustainable, doesn't always have a consistent answer. Maybe this is not exactly the most constructive and helpful way to start writing a book about sustainability, but that is how life is sometimes. I think it's better to be aware of the adversities one might face before jumping in. But no matter how different our lives may be, there are some things that are good to know as a consumer. Some things that we consume in our everyday lives are just not ideal, or even remotely up to par, which is not necessarily our fault. So the companies that are benefiting from our consumption of these goods need to get it together. And on that note, it is time for a disclaimer of sorts. I want to thoroughly highlight that all the steps we take toward being more sustainable are valid. More importantly, not everyone takes the same steps, and all routes to sustainability are valid. Sustainability rarely comes in one size fits all. And while I might highlight some habits and actions that I was able to change, or that I benefited from changing, it might be different for you. This is where I want you to remember that it is okay if your sustainability journey does not look exactly like mine. It's just as good. I have based this book in my own experiences of life, and as such, the habits and actions that I have chosen to include reflect those I have experienced myself. I want you to remember that it might not be universally applicable in every situation. That would simply be impossible. Or at least make the book so heavy that no one would be able to pick it up. You might not be in a position where you are able to make similar decisions, or cut out certain products right now, or ever. I want you to remember that even trying is a bloody amazing thing. Just picking up a book to learn more about sustainability is more than many people do, so you're already on a good track. I want you to remember this if you ever feel discouraged or like you are not enough. We are all just trying our best. So, This book is partly a lifestyle guide for those who want to live a greener life and who want to know how the heck one might actually do that. But it is also a book that explains some of the issues with our everyday products. This book is filled with personal anecdotes from my own journey, from being a shopping connoisseur and a hyper-consumer to a zero waster. Additionally, it also has tons of facts that might come in handy and that will hopefully give you a bit of an overview. So here you go. Use Sustainable Badass as a lifestyle guide, a work of reference, a collection of recipes, and/or to guide you through daily dilemmas when it is unclear what to do. You are, of course, always free to do whatever you want. But if you want to be a sustainable badass, it always helps to have done your homework first. Gitte Marie Johansen. Chapter 1. The Plastic Problem. The first time I ever noticed the term zero waste was in an article about a woman from New York who could fit all her trash of 3 years into a single mason jar. I thought that sounded fascinating because I was making more trash than that just during an average day. That article started something in me, because I had never actually thought about my trash and where it ends up. Okay, I knew that it, of course, did not just disappear into thin air, but that the trash pickup would take care of it and send it off to a local waste plant. So far, so good. But I paid very little attention to my trash. And because of this, it felt like stepping into a completely new world when I started to find out what the problems with plastic actually are. So I think it's only fitting that this book will start in the same place that I started my own journey towards sustainability, and that is with the plastic problem. This is how plastic is made. Every piece of plastic that has ever been produced in human history still exists in some shape or form. This was the first thing I learned about plastic when I started to seek out information about sustainability and pollution back in January of 2015, and that fact has resonated in my mind ever since. Regardless of how plastic is managed, once it has been thrown away, it will never disappear. 90% of global plastic produced is based on fossil materials. In contrast to other materials like cardboard or paper, plastic will never decompose. It will only be reduced to smaller pieces of plastic. As a result, even in countries or areas where waste is burned in incinerator plants, it won't disappear into thin air. The plastic merely changes its shape, but remains as resistant to decomposition as ever. But before we venture into a discussion of why plastic is bad and, more importantly, what we can do differently, we have to talk about what plastic actually is. The cheapest way to produce plastic is through fracking, a process which retrieves crude oil from underground. The primary goal of this process is to extract oil for fuel production. However, a byproduct from this process is the greenhouse gas, ethane. After the extraction, this gas is converted into ethylene through a process called cracking. And that is what plastic is made of. The process of fracking is extremely polluting and harmful for many reasons, one of them being the methane emissions it produces. This greenhouse gas is 25% more potent than CO2. From here, it does not take a lot of effort to get to the conclusion that the production of plastic has a harmful effect on our planet. Plastic production emits methane. It then requires energy and transportation to distribute the plastic, and we ultimately throw it away without a second thought, even though it's here forever. That is not exactly a perfect combination. So why do we use that crap? There are, of course, many answers to that question, but a good place to start is with the industry that produces it. When I had to do research for my first lecture about zero waste living, I ran an internet search that went something like, "What the heck is plastic actually made of?" Because, truthfully, I didn't actually know. one of the first results that came up was an article published by a representative of the European plastic industry, something I did not initially realize. I clicked on the article, and it said that plastic is an organic material like paper and wool. Everything about this article made plastic sound like a natural product that our modern civilization gladly could use without any worry. I learned a very important lesson here. While we as consumers are willing to inform ourselves and be critical toward the products we use every day, the industries that make those products are lying in wait to misinform and mislead us. These companies have made it unbelievably difficult to navigate what is true and what is false. I guess that companies producing plastic products are not exactly jumping with joy over the fact that plastic is facing more criticism than ever before. So they invest massive amounts of financial resources, trying to keep our focus away from the fact that the product they produce has a devastating effect on the planet. There is a lot to take in and a lot to change. But a good place to start is by minimizing our use of plastic, and especially single-use plastic. Facts about plastic. A plastic product is used for an average of 12 minutes before it is discarded. 50% of all plastic is only used once before it is thrown away. 40% of all plastic is produced for packaging. An average American throws away roughly 286 pounds of plastic every year. Microplastic. So what happens to plastic once it degrades? Microplastics are small plastic particles that are smaller than 1/4 inch across, and they are a result of plastic that degrades. As mentioned before, plastic does not technically decompose, it just becomes smaller pieces of plastic, aka microplastic. These particles are often so small that they cannot be filtered through water and sewage treatment plants, and as a result, they end up in rivers, lakes, oceans, and yes, even in our own tap water. A study from Medical University of Vienna found microplastic in the stomachs of 8 different people from 8 different countries. We all ingest microplastic in the form of regular consumer products, like our food and drink. However, an especially high concentration of microplastic has been found in many animal products like fish, shellfish, and honey. Although it's not only with food products that we should be aware of microplastic. Car tires generate particularly high amounts of microplastic, and a large amount of microplastic generated by the average person comes from this source. As some of you may have guessed, this is because car tires are made with plastic components and the material is worn down on the asphalt. Synthetic materials also have a role to play here. Every time we use or wash a piece of synthetic clothing, like a polyester shirt or a microfiber washcloth, microplastic is released from the material. A shirt or a cloth is basically worn down in the same way as car tires. Another big player in the microplastic discharge game is beauty and care products. Products like face and body scrubs, toothpaste, makeup, and, of course, glitter. Later in this book, we will get back to what types of microplastic there are and how to avoid them. However, I want to add that several restrictions and laws, especially in Europe, have been put in place in order to combat unnecessary microplastic in things like beauty and care products. Even so, microplastic in the products you buy is always a good thing to be aware of, especially as an American consumer. Overall, there are still tons of improvements we, as well as our governments, can make to combat microplastic. Garbage islands. It seems unlikely that all microplastic in the oceans comes from car tires and polyester shirts, right? Well, that's because this is not true. The majority of plastic particles in the world's oceans, which are ingested by humans and animals through water and food, come from plastic dumped in nature. When plastic is left in direct sunlight or in water, it will start degrading into smaller particles because the material becomes worn down and weakened. It simply falls apart. Perhaps you know those really old plastic food containers from your grandparents' house? You know, the one that's so soft that the lid will not fit on the top of the container anymore. This is actually the same thing that happens to plastic when it is worn down by nature. Only it tends to happen quicker because the conditions are constant and the scale of the weakening of plastic is much larger in nature than in your grandparents' pantry. Plastic can end up in our oceans in a lot of different ways. Wind can carry it out of an open-lid bin and fly it to the beach. Birds or other animals can transport it long distances. People can drop it on the streets and in public places. And sometimes, plastic is left in nature on purpose. It is estimated that a truckload's worth of plastic is dumped in our oceans every second. And that has serious consequences. A 2018 study from the European Parliament estimated that there is approximately 150 million metric tons of plastic in the ocean today, a number which is only increasing, because every year an additional 8 million metric tons of plastic ends up at sea. In some countries, the majority of consumer waste is burned at waste-to-energy incinerator plants. And in those cases, it can be hard to see how that waste plays any part in ocean pollution. Even if most waste is burned, it's still a massive problem. With increasing consumer waste, most waste plants cannot manage all the trash we produce. And as a result, waste is sold and shipped to other places in the world. Even countries that talk a big game about not using open landfills occasionally get around that by shipping waste out of the country to, for example, Poland or Malaysia, where the waste will eventually end up in a landfill anyway. As a result of this trash export, certain areas don't have the capacity to properly manage or handle the increasing amounts that are expected of them. An example of this is China, which in 2017 ceased its imports of American waste. The burden of both local and Western waste can also be seen in India, Bangladesh, Indonesia, and Malaysia. These countries are used by Western companies for cheap outsourced production of goods due to less strict environmental requirements and laws, leaving these areas with not only the waste and production of their own population, but much of the burden of Western consumerism as well. When truck after truck dumps plastic waste in the ocean, that plastic is going to gather on the surface of the water, because most plastic floats. It then gathers in bundles, because the world's oceans are connected by currents. The same currents which are an essential part of our tempered climate. Those currents distribute and transport warm and cold water, but they also work kind of like a centrifuge for the waste that floats on top. There are multiple garbage islands in the world, but the largest one goes by the name the Great Pacific Garbage Patch, and is located, yeah, this is pretty self-explanatory, in the Pacific Ocean. This island of waste weighs in at around 95,900 tons and takes up an area that is twice the size of Texas. It is 618,000 square miles and is made of more than 1.8 billion pieces of plastic from all over the world. But what is the garbage island made of? Several studies show that the Great Pacific Garbage Patch contains daily consumer waste from all over the world. The plastic packaging from that ice cream you had at the beach last summer can actually end up as part of a trash island, or float up on a coast halfway around the globe. However, it is not only daily consumer waste that constitutes the garbage islands. Fish nets and other fishing gear make up the largest uniform category of waste in the oceans today, with 705 tons of gear, nets, traps, and lines, which are left behind by the fishing industry every year. This is also called ghost gear. A mixed group of different daily consumer products makes up 49% of all plastic in the oceans. The 10 largest categories of consumer products in the ocean, according to a study by the EU, are 1. Water bottles, lids, and caps. 2. Cigarette butts. 3. Cotton swabs. 4. Candy wrappers and snack bags. 5. Hygiene products like tampons, pads, and insertion sleeves. 6. Plastic bags. 7. Single-use cutlery and straws. 8. Plastic cups and lids. 9. Balloons and balloon sticks. 10. Plastic containers like fast food packaging. What are we doing about it? When you know all these facts, it is easy to feel a little alone in the world, and alone with all your worries. But you're certainly not alone. Luckily, several countries and communities have already taken great steps to ban or restrict certain types of plastic to combat the waste problem. In 2017, Kenya restricted plastic bags and introduced the world's strictest laws against plastic pollution. In the same year, Vanuatu, as the first island in the Pacific, began a plastic ban which would restrict the use of plastic bags and bottles. In the beginning of 2018, England announced a 25-year plan that will remove microplastic from beauty products, as well as a restriction on cotton swabs, straws, and plastic bottles. In 2019, Taiwan began a long-term project that will ensure an efficient recycling process, as well as a gradual ban on straws, cutlery, cups, and bags made from single-use plastic. In 2017, Zimbabwe announced a complete ban on the plastic product EPS, which is a type of packaging that resembles polystyrene and that can neither decompose nor be recycled. Furthermore, several countries have introduced or talked about introducing fees and taxes on plastic bags, though there are no countries that match the efforts of Rwanda. Since 2008, Rwanda has had a complete ban on plastic bags, a ban so strictly enforced that it may result in a prison sentence if ignored. According to the organization Plastic Oceans, Rwanda's working toward being completely plastic-free in the near future. There are several other places in the world where we are also seeing improvements on and restriction of the use of plastic. Political Green Action in Denmark is introducing an expanded return system for plastic bottles and cans, as well as a ban on some plastic bags and an efficient recycling system. An efficient recycling system is something that is commonly spoke of in the context of sustainable political action. Recycling is often regarded as the best method with which to combat the waste issue. But how exactly is plastic recycled? Chapter 2. Recycling, a Waste Management Guide. It is difficult to create an everyday routine wherein everything you encounter comes completely without packaging. In an average day, you will most likely come in contact with packaging and other products with limited lifespans, and that will generate waste. The expression zero waste can therefore easily be misleading, because many people will hear it and instantly think that the person using this expression creates absolutely no waste. Zero. Nada, as the name so cleverly suggests. But in reality, the name refers to a general goal rather than the actual practice. To produce absolutely zero waste, one would have to be in control of every aspect of one's life, including what guests, friends, and family bring into your home, or what is put in your hand at work, in school, at the gym, or at any other location. Of course, it is possible to refuse tons of items, but we most likely will generate small amounts of waste.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?